We're all familiar with the famous statement of the Gemara, Mishenichnas Adar, Marbim Besimcha. When we come to the month of Adar, we are supposed to have some kind of elevated level of Simcha, more so than we feel throughout the rest of the year. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, what is so unique, what is so special about the month of Adar, more so than many other months? We know that the Jewish community had many different junctures throughout history in which they were threatened, many different times in which they experienced a great Yeshua, a great salvation. So what is so special about Adar, and why is it that we have an obligation to be marbe besimcha in the month of Adar? So I take myself back to the month in January, when I was a part of a delegation of 8 Rabbanim who were sponsored to go to Eretz Yisrael for about a week, for a week of continued education, and it was an amazing week on so many levels. But one of the jobs that I was tasked with was to make the itinerary for that week. One of the things that I very much wanted to do, and many of my friends wanted to do the same, was to visit the IVF and PGD lab in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. And the reason why is because, as Rabbanim, many of us have to deal with these kinds of questions that come up, unfortunately, with those who suffer with infertility. And as much as we know about it in theory, it would make a major difference to all of us if we were able to see it actually in practice, if we were able to actually see what the techniques are and what exactly it is that we're dealing with when couples suffer with infertility. So IVF is known to many of us, but what's far less known is the new technology of PGD, which is about 15 years old in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. They told us that they did the first PGD baby was born about 14 or 15 years ago, and after he was born as a healthy child, the entire staff of the hospital that was involved in his birth went to his bris, and now just about a year or two ago, they attended his bar mitzvah as well. And what PGD basically is just in simple terms, when you have a family that has some kind of genetic disorder, and they're afraid to have children that will carry that genetic disorder, so the technology allows today for the sperm and the egg to be extracted, and then they look at it under a microscope and they remove and they extract any of the problematic genes that are in the egg and the sperm. Then they once again take the egg and the sperm and they re-implant it into the woman after all of the problematic genes have been taken out. It's an absolutely miraculous phenomenon. It's an amazing reality that we have in our world today. And in fact, they told us there in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital that this first child that was born, when they came to his bar mitzvah, the bar mitzvah almost looked like a hospital, because they said all of the 5 or 6 other members of his family had to come with their wheelchairs and their breathing tubes and their feeding tubes. And this child, the 7th child in the family, came completely healthy. He needed no help, he needed no medical equipment, and he is a completely healthy child because of the blessing of the PGD lab in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. So it's an amazing phenomenon. So we were there, and one of the presentations that we were so privileged to hear was from Professor Altaresco, who is a Polish-Jewish woman who runs the PGD lab in Shaarei Tzedek, and parenthetically, they told us as well, was one of the scientists who was responsible for defining and for coming up with the research on the BRCA gene. So she's an amazingly accomplished woman. And as we were walking out there, she turned to Rabbi Asher Weiss, who had led our group, and she said, "You know, I'm not often in the presence of rabbis. Can I use the opportunity to ask you a question that's been bothering me for a long time?" And he said, "Sure." And she asked him, she said, "You know, I have a problem, because sometimes I come to work and I feel like I'm playing God. What right do I have, if God wanted that this child should be born with some kind of genetic disorder, what right do I have to intervene? What right do I have to get involved and to change that reality? I feel that I'm doing something that is theologically incorrect, and I'm not sure if I'm doing the right thing." So Rabbi Asher Weiss turned to her and he said, "You know, let's take a step back. What about whenever you have a sick person? What about whenever you have a sick patient? And the doctor has every ability to do some kind of medical intervention and to change the situation and cure the patient. Isn't that also playing God? What right do we have, if God wanted this person to be sick, what right do we have as human beings to change that phenomenon, to change that reality?" And obviously we know the Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim, "Virapo yirape." A doctor has every right to use whatever medical knowledge, whatever scientific body of knowledge that they have, to now make this person's condition as best as it possibly can be. That is the obligation, that is the right, and that is the privilege that those who are involved in the medical profession have to heal the patients that are sent their way. And he said, "The same goes here. If God gave you the ability through the advancement of science today to now make the lives of others be ones that are going to be healthier, be lives that are going to be more successful, perhaps to be lives that are going to be more beneficial to them and to others, obviously you need to use whatever it is in your power, whatever scientific knowledge you now have at your disposal to help those people to have the best life they possibly can have. And then he turned to us and he said, we're a group of Rabbanim, does anyone else have any thoughts on this matter? So what I thought was the following. My father writes in one of his Svarim, and this is going to tie back to Mishanichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. My father writes in one of his Svarim, you know, we're only a month away from celebrating Pesach. I know it's a scary thought, but it's the reality. And when we go through the Haggadah on Leil HaSeder, sometimes we have a mistaken impression. We talk about all the Eser Makos, and we get the mistaken impression that they happen one day after the next, or one week after the other. And in reality, the way that this played out was over an extended period of time. All of the Eser Makos took at least a year for all of them to happen while the Jews were stuck in Egypt, while the Jews were stuck in Mitzrayim. So you have to wonder, the Jewish community is there in Mitzrayim, and they're watching as their enemies, as the Egyptians, are having Dam, Tzfardea, Kinim, Arov, one Makkah after the other, unbelievable miracles, and they're watching all of this unfold in front of their eyes. And then comes the climax, where they all experience Makkas Bechoros, and then Yitzias Mitzrayim, when Paro asks that all of them leave, and Paro chases the Jewish community out of the town, out of the land. And finally, they're a free people. And you have to wonder, did nobody think of singing Shira? Did nobody think of thanking God all throughout this process? Here you're watching all the Makos unfold. You're watching Yad Chazak of Israel Netuya. You're watching God in His most glorious form. And nobody thinks to turn around and say, God, we're so grateful to You for what You have done, for the salvation that You've created for us, for all these miracles that You're providing for our community. How come nobody's saying Shira? And perhaps you'll say that while they were stuck in Egypt, nobody wanted to sing Shira because they were still afraid for their lives. They didn't know whether or not the outcome would be a positive one. All they saw was the Makos, but they did not know they would become a free people. What about when they finally left on that last night after Makos Bechoros? How come now you're finally a free nation? How come nobody thought to sing Shira? And it's not until 7 days later when they come to the Yamsuf, Nivuchim Ein Ba'aretz, they're stuck, and they don't know exactly where to go, and in front of them they see the sea, and they don't know exactly where they're supposed to travel. They seem to be in a place that has no way out. And finally they experience Kriyas Yamsuf, and immediately they respond, Az Yashar Moshe V'nei Yisrael. And you have to wonder, where have they been? How come nobody thought to sing Shira until this point? What changed suddenly now by Yetzias Mitzrayim, by Kriyas Yamsuf a week later, a year later, that suddenly everybody felt it was an appropriate time to burst out in song and to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that He had done for them as a Jewish people and as a nation? Rav Soloveitchik suggests perhaps the reason why is because there was one critical difference between that which took place throughout all the Makos and Makos Bechoros Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that which finally happened now on the occasion of Kriyas Yamsuf. Suggests Rav Soloveitchik, when they came to the Yamsuf and they were stuck, as we know until this point, it was Biyad Chazaka of Israel Netuya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechvod of Atzmo. God did everything by Himself. He made all of these miracles possible. There was no human intervention. And finally they come to the Yamsuf and they seem to be stuck, and Moshe Rabbeinu begins to cry out, he begins to daven. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Matitzak Eli, why are you crying to me? I would imagine Moshe Rabbeinu looks back at the Ribbono Shel Olam and he says, what else am I supposed to do? Isn't that what we've done all along? Haven't you always been the one to save us? Haven't you always been there to bail us out and to do a miracle for us? That's what we're praying for now as well. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu here says, this is inappropriate. At this point he says, Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yisou. I've done so much for you. I have performed miracle upon miracle, and I have saved you and made you into a free people. Now it's your turn to partner and collaborate with me and create the next chapter of your own history. Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yisou. I need some courageous Jews to stand up and to make a difference in the world. I need those people to stand up and make the next chapter of their own history. I need somebody who's willing to risk it, to jump into those waters, and to make the miracle happen. I have now invited you to participate with me and to partake in the story of your own redemption. There is nothing in the world that could be more satisfying, that could be more exhilarating than when God empowers us as human beings to be a part of His creation, to be a part of our redemption. There is nothing in the world that can be more fulfilling, more gratifying, and more rewarding than when the Ribono Shel Olam shows us that He has invested in us, that He has entrusted us to do something special in the world and to make a major difference in the way that the world runs, to improve the world from the way it was before we got here. And this, writes Rav Soloveitchik, is why they finally felt there was a need to sing Az Yashir on the occasion of Yitzias Mitzrayim, not when they came out, but rather when they finally came out successfully from the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf. Rav Soloveitchik then takes it a step further and he says, you'll notice that we do not have an obligation in the Torah itself to bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu for any food items. You eat an apple, you eat an orange, you eat a pear. We have so much hano, we have so much benefit from the physical world that we see and we inhabit, and we have no obligation to thank the Ribono Shel Olam except once. The Torah says, Ve'achalta, Ve'savata, Uve'rachta. When eating bread, we then have an obligation, Midaraisa. On a biblical level, we now have an obligation to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that experience. Suggests Rav Soloveitchik, perhaps the reason why is because when it comes to all the other food items, it is grown on the tree, it is grown in the ground, we pick it off and we eat it. Everything was done by the Ribono Shel Olam. When it comes to the experience of eating bread, that is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I invite you to partake and engage in the process of creating this food. You need to plant, and after you plant, it's not finished. After you finish the planting, you need to harvest. And after you harvest, you need to make it into flour. After it's made into flour, you need to bake it. And because we have an involvement, because we collaborate and partner with the Ribono Shel Olam in creating that food, that is when we have the greatest sense of satisfaction, and that is why we have an obligation. Ve'achalta, ve'savata, uve'rachta. And perhaps suggests the Chiddushi Harim, this is why, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha. This was a time in Jewish history when the Ribono Shel Olam said, I'm going to take a back seat. And I'm going to allow the Jewish people to step up. Mordechai and Esther and all the courageous Jews of their generation had an opportunity to step up and to write the next chapter of their own redemption. The Ribono Shel Olam entrusted us to make a difference in the world. And it's because of that that we have an elevated and an exaggerated sense of simcha during this month when we remind ourselves of how powerful a human being's participation in the world can actually be. When we remind ourselves of how much the Ribono Shel Olam has invested in all of us and how much He loves and He yearns for our participation in everything that goes on in His beautiful world. Let me just close. There's an amazing Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin where we're told a startling statement. The Gemara there in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Ches, tells us the story of Hillel. Hillel was once sitting around with his friends and he makes a comment to one of them by saying, Ein Mashiach li Yisrael, which sounds like a surprising, a shocking statement. And in fact, one of his friends, Rabbi Yosef, who's sitting next to him, turns to him and he says in such shock, Sharele Mari le Hillel, I hope that God can find a place in his heart to forgive you for saying such an unacceptable statement, for saying that there's not going to be a Messiah. How can you say such a thing? Do you not know that the Jews have been praying for Mashiach for thousands of years? Don't you know that this is our destiny? Don't you know the Ani Mamins and how many times a day we daven for the coming of Mashiach? How can you say, Ein Mashiach li Yisrael? Sharele Mari le Hillel, says Rabbi Yosef, I hope that God can find a place in his heart to forgive Hillel for saying such an unacceptable statement. Now Rashi there on the spot says, one cannot think that Hillel really meant what we thought he meant. Hillel obviously knew that there is something special about the coming of Mashiach. Hillel obviously understood that this was something that the Jewish people have been looking forward to for thousands of years. Hillel knows that this is what the Jewish community in the diaspora is all about, and this is what we so much look forward to and pray for. So what did Hillel mean? Says Rashi, what Hillel meant was not that he denied the coming of Mashiach, but that Hillel so badly wanted that we should have the Ribono Shel Olam himself, Bechvodo Va'atzmo. We should have in the times of the coming of Mashiach that God himself should reveal his own presence to all of us. And he should come just as he did when we came out of Egypt, when we came out of Mitzrayim. He should reveal himself and he should then show us his might, his glory, just like he did when we were in Egypt. We want that that should be the experience when Mashiach will come as well. We don't want a human intervention. While as for Soloveitchik, if that is the case, why was Rabbi Yosef, his friend, so ashamed? Why was Rabbi Yosef so upset and offended by this comment? Isn't that beautiful? Hillel says he wants to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without anyone in the middle, without any intermediaries. He wants God Himself to reveal His own presence. We want to feel the potency and the power of what it means to be in the presence of God. So why is that such an offensive comment? Says Rav Soloveitchik, in a different context, perhaps the reason why is, just as unacceptable as it is for a person to say, Ein Mashiach LeYisrael in the literal sense, just as much as we know we are not allowed to say there will not be the coming of Mashiach, it is equally unacceptable for a Jew to believe that we as human beings will not have a hand in the coming of the Mashiach. God has entrusted us, the Ribbono Shel Olam believes in us, and He wants us to step up and make a major difference in the world. He has empowered all of us, He has invested in all of us, and He knows that we as human beings can have a major part in the next chapter of our own salvation, in the next chapter of our own redemption. And that, says Rabbi Yosef, if a Jew lives life without the understanding and without the belief that we have the ability to make that difference and to invest of ourselves in making sure that the world becomes a better place than it was before we got here, that is so unacceptable because that is so against everything that we believe in as Jews. This, perhaps, writes the Chiddushei Harim, is what we mean when we say, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. We remind ourselves during this month of Adar as we read the story of Mordechai and Esther and the unbelievable celebration that we had when the Jewish people were saved. This is the opportunity to remind ourselves that as human beings, we can make such a positive impact in the world. We can make such a major difference in all that goes on. The Ribbono Shel Olam trusts in us. The Ribbono Shel Olam empowers all of us. And the Ribbono Shel Olam invites all of us to collaborate, to partner, to participate, and to engage in all that goes on in making this world a better place than it was before we got here. Reb Hanani.